Hello, this is Robert Cornthwaite, and you're listening to the K-League United podcast.
This week on the K-League United podcast, we take a look at South Korea's AFC Asian Cup campaign thus far. After talking tactics and the Taegeuk Warriors' chances in the knockout stages, there's also an exclusive interview with former Socceroos and Drangnam Dragons defender Robert Cornthwaite. For all that and much more, this is the latest edition of the K-League United podcast. Hello, Anasio. Welcome to the latest edition of the K-League United podcast. Paul Neat here, your host again this week. Just like the Korean national team, we're a little bit hamstrung with a couple of notable absentees. Ryan Walters is a long-term absentee. Matthew Binns failed the late fitness test. But if we have one thing at K-League United, it is strength in depth. So I have some more than adequate replacements for you today with Scott Whitelock.
Hello.
And Steve Price.
Hey, how's it going?
Gentlemen, how are we?
Yeah, pretty good. Feeling a bit tired after all these late nights trying to watch the Asian Cup, but yeah, apart from that, not too bad.
Scott?
I'm fine, mate, thank you.
I tell you what though, speaking of the late nights watching the Asian Cup, it's like having a World Cup again, only 6 months later. Two or three games in one day, and it's kind of sport for choice. It's also given us like a preview of what the World Cup is going to be like, because obviously the time of year-ish, and the time zone as well, if we are still in Korea in 4 years' time. Not sure, but who knows. So, the tournament so far, any surprise results or teams that have performed better than you thought, Steve?
Well, yeah. Speaking of the World Cup, I mean, Qatar have played pretty well. They've got some good results. I mean, they've played some easier teams. North Korea look completely hopeless under their new manager. But, yeah, the way Qatar were playing when I watched them the other day, they had a lot of confidence and, you know, that team... They've been picked, so they're going to be hitting their peak during the World Cup. So they could, yeah, not embarrass themselves maybe in 4 years' time. And, of course, Jordan, they got that big result against Australia in the opening game of theirs, and they look pretty solid. They're already through to the next round.
I enjoyed watching the Central Asian teams, just because I've never seen them play before, and it's a little bit interesting, especially the Turkmenistan-Japan game. It was a really great game to watch.
Yeah.
There's an interesting story surrounding them where the majority of their squad comes from the champions of Turkmenistan. The entire squad's basically just one team. I'm just enjoying watching some teams, some players that I'd never ever watch.
Yeah.
Maybe never ever watch ever again.
Indeed. Well, today the conversation is obviously about the knockout stages of the AFC Asian Cup. But first, we will have a quick look at Korea's group stage campaign thus far, the Taegeuk Warriors' chances in the latter stages, and we also have a very special guest in former Drangnam Dragons and Socceroos defender Robert Cornthwaite, who will be joining us a bit later on. So, let's start with where it all began, with the Philippines, a 1-0 win thanks to Hwang Hee-jo's 50th minute strike. It was a narrow win, I think. More people would have expected them to have got past them a little bit easier than they did. What did you think, Steve? What takeaways did you have from the performance and the result?
When Philippines played, they set themselves up very defensively. And even though their players have experience at a low level in Europe, I think even that little bit really made a big difference compared to, say, Vietnam. When I watched them play against Iran, you could see Vietnam made a lot of kind of silly mistakes, and that kind of cost them in the end, but the Philippines didn't make those kind of mistakes. So it was up to Korea to break them down. Eventually they did, they won the match, but you could see their passing wasn't really off. They got the ball in the places where they should have, but then they just couldn't get that final pass through, and they kept misplacing those passes and that kind of thing. And because of that, they didn't create really enough quality chances.
Yeah, I did worry about teams that would get men behind the ball, whether Korea would be able to break them down. And they found it quite difficult, because the Philippines defended very well in that first game. But they got the goal in the second half, and it was a well-taken goal by someone that I think you have a lot of admiration for, Hwang Hee-jo.
Yeah, you can see with Hwang Hee-jo, he knows how to play in these tournaments. He did it in the Asian Games where he was scoring for fun there. and his technique was really spot on, and that's the kind of play you need. You need those players with that kind of tight technique to be able to create those chances and get those goals against teams where they kind of pack the back line like that.
Now, it was the opening game, so they got the win. That was probably the most important thing, would you say? Is it just about getting the result in that opening game, or is it a good team performance to go along with it as well? Is that
definitely just get the win?
Yeah,
get everything out of the way. And I don't think the performance was all that bad anyway. There was a lot of doom and gloom on social media after that game. I don't think it was necessary. They won the game well. Philippines defended well, but they never really had any chances to actually score a goal. Korea controlled the game pretty well, kept possession well, recycled possession well. Fullbacks got into good positions, very high and wide, but they were probably both the two most disappointing players on the pitch. I think Heung-Yong and Kim Jin-soo really struggled to create anything at all. And as the game went along, too many long balls, Korea kind of lost their discipline, and I think that's why they probably didn't score a few extra goals. But they won the game comfortably. They got a win from the first group game. I don't think there's anything to complain about, really.
Yeah, fair enough. He stuck to the 4-2-3-1. Now, against teams that are going to sit back against you, do you think two holding midfield players, is that the right thing to do? I mean, obviously, who are we to criticise the man that is Mr. Paolo Bento? But if you're trying to get on the front foot, do you think you need two holding midfield players?
I mean, one of those was Ki Sung Yeong, and the way he plays, he's the guy who's got that passing ability to unlock a defence. And so even though he's playing as a holding midfield player, he's got that more of that attacking ability, mm-hmm. even though his position is deeper in the pitch. So with him now, I think, yeah, you should play with the two.
Yeah.
Maybe in the second game when he was out injured for the second game, you don't need to have two in that situation.
It's a good point, yeah.
Even Jung Woo Young's got talent. He can play a pass, he can pick out a pass. It's not exactly having a Scott Parker type midfielder. They're both cultured midfielders who can do something.
They are. They are both very similar. Would you say it's one or the other, or can they play there together?
I think they're building quite a good partnership together.
Yeah.
They complement each other quite well. They know which one should go forward and which one should stay back. I think it works quite well.
Yeah, and building that partnership is going to be important later on when you're playing that formation against teams that do attack a bit more, because they've got more time to get used to playing in that formation with the same players around them.
Mm. Yeah, so they got the result, got the 3 points, and then that took them into the second game against Kyrgyzstan. Again, just 1-0. This time it was Kim Min-jae, just before half-time, with a header from a corner. What did they improve on in that game, do you think? What can you see any signs of improvement or a progression? What were your takeaways from the second game?
Yeah, so I think a lot of the negative kind of comments and stuff on social media were pretty much because that game was a late game, so not as many people saw it. The performance was much better in that second game. I'll throw some stats out there if you want
to
do this, because a lot of people just looked at the 1-0 and think, oh, 1-0, it must be the same as the first game. And you look at, say, Iran when they beat Yemen and they won that game 5-0, and people must be thinking, oh, they're brilliant, they're going to win the tournament or something. In that game, Iran had 5 goals, Korea had 1. Iran had 20 shots, Korea had 19. But crucially, shots inside the box, Iran only had 14, where Korea had 17. So Korea, they're creating those chances and kind of good chances inside the box. The problem in that game was they couldn't take them. Mm. As we saw, they missed 2 open goals. they hit the underside of the bar twice, and that, if that's a millimetre lower, both of those are goals.
Yeah.
And so that could have easily been 5-0 if those things had gone differently, and people would have had a completely different outlook to how Korea are doing than how people have been commenting on them so far.
Yeah. Now, in the build-up to the game, not a lot, but some sections of the media here in Korea, they were saying that it was not just about the result, it was about getting the performance. We talked about in the first game, it's just about getting the result, those 3 points. But in the second game, do you think that was right to say that they needed to put in a good performance, Scott?
I mean, again, it's just group games. It doesn't really matter. They're gonna progress through the group no matter what. They're likely to play an easier team in the first knockout stage, so I don't think it's really necessary that they need to click immediately. They have time to work their way and feel their way into the tournament. Like Steve said, they played quite well in the second half against Kyrgyzstan. They just couldn't put the ball in the back of the net, especially Huang Yi-chan was quite profligate. But I don't think there's any worries. They're playing okay. Yeah. They're not playing perfectly. They're playing okay, and they're building and feeling their way into the tournament.
And they've got 2 wins out of 2, which is it's better than some of the other teams around them.
And 2 clean sheets.
Yeah, two clean sheets. They're second in the group, but so are Japan, so are Australia. And Australia can't come top in their group. So I think they're doing okay with 2 wins out of 2. Nothing to worry about. Yeah. I mean, when France won the World Cup, they started slowly in the summer, as we saw. So I think things are fine at the moment.
Yeah.
So for that game, obviously, there's a few changes were made to the 11 because of injury. Ki Sung Young obviously picked up an injury. Huang Inbom came in and filled in. EJ Song was deemed not fit enough to start, so Yi Chung Young began on the left flank, and Hong Chul was preferred at Kim Jin Soo, a left back. Do you think those were the right choices to personnel to bring in?
Well, I think a lot of people were criticising Huang Yi-chan, and later on in the group, when he needs to be pressing a bit more, and he needs to also be like trying to run and use his movement more. In those kind of knockout games when teams are attacking a bit, he's going to be very important. But in that kind of game, his kind of key attributes about his movement and his speed and his pressing ability are not needed so much. So maybe if they had switched him out and put a more technical player like Yi Sung-woo in, where he can use his kind of close footwork to maybe unlock a few more chances, that could have been a better move. But apart from that, I think it was pretty much tactically spot on.
Fair enough. So the third and final group game will be taking place on Wednesday, or have taken place on Wednesday if you listen to us on FNR Radio. So this the group decider who finishes top of the group. How important is it to actually finish top of the group? Is it obviously they will play one of the best third place teams if they do win the group. But even if they do finish second, they'll still play a runner-up. Is it runner-up to Group A? I think that they,
yeah,
that they
which
play.
At the moment is India. It could be India or Thailand, probably.
So is topping the group that important? Do you think going into the China game, just get a draw and go through? Or, I mean, obviously they're already through, but I mean, maintain that unbeaten record they have under Paolo Bento?
I mean, it wouldn't be a disaster if they finished second in the group, but there's a difference between playing one of the teams who are literally on 0 points at the moment. Oman, Kyrgyzstan, Vietnam, Lebanon all sit in third place and they could all easily qualify for the next round, even though they have 0 points in the group at the moment. So India have picked up a handy result against Thailand. You don't know how that game would go. So I think it is quite important to finish top.
I think if you come top, you've got a bit of momentum going on as well. It's going to be good for the team to keep building that momentum. I tried to work out like whether it's better, whether one side of the draw is easier or one side's not. But because a lot of teams who you would expect to be top are currently second, it's quite hard to say which side is the easiest, if there is such a thing.
Yeah.
To win the tournament, if Korea are going to try and do that, they're going to have to beat the top teams at some point anyway.
Yeah.
So in that case, it doesn't really matter. But of course, you want to keep that momentum building and get a third win out of three to build the confidence.
We talked about how they did create a lot of chances in that second game. Obviously, they couldn't quite put the ball away. They've only got 2 goals scored. Do you think they missed a trick? Because China obviously won that game 3-0 against the Philippines to put them, you know, goal difference ahead at the top of the group. Have Korea missed a trick there by finding it hard to find the goal?
You're saying to miss the trick to have not won the game 4-0. In that case, I'd say not really, because you're still going into this China game, you're going to want to win it no matter what, and you're still under no pressure if you lose it no matter what, because you're still going to be in the top two.
Yeah.
So I think it's kind of the same situation either way.
Okay. All right, so thus far, from what you've seen from the first two games, what has been the good things that they've done?
I think controlling possession and actually getting the front foot and dictating play so far. The clean sheets are massive. I mean, if you go back to World Cup qualification, is a team that couldn't keep clean sheets at all. And if they're going to come up against big boys like Iran later on in the tournament, defence needs to be strong, so I think keeping clean sheets is going to be a vital goal throughout the tournament.
So they've been trying to create good chances. They've not just been hitting it into the box and hoping, not just been giving it to the wingers and getting them to cross it in every time. They've been trying to pass it around and get those shots inside the box. And I think we saw that's what they did with so many shots inside the box in that second game. So even though they didn't score those chances, I think they've been creating enough chances, which is a definite positive.
And they've also got Key and Son to come back into the team soon.
That's true. Before we get to Son, we'll touch on things that you think that maybe they could improve on. What's been the negative things that you've seen thus far?
I'm going to be a little bit harsh. It's a bit boring at the moment. They are creating chances, but they can't convert any of them. Pretty much rely on Hwang Hee-jo to score anything that comes along his way. And it is quite a bit boring. I think the attacking players like Hwang Hee-chan, Gu Jae-chol, Lee Jae-sung need to take some responsibility and step up and start actually producing something and some end product.
I say they're going to need some inflatable unicorns or whatever the Korean equivalent of that is. You could see how that really helped England in the World Cup kind of lose that kind of pressure which was on them. Korea were under an awful lot of pressure, and even winning this game 1-0 and people saying that's not enough, that's the kind of pressure they're under. And I think it shows. I mean, they've missed 3 penalties under Bento so far, and they missed 2 open goals in that last game. So these are chances where players were kind of feeling confident would score all of those, but they've missed them all. And I think there must be something kind of going along. There's a lot of pressure on their shoulders. So they need to do something to get that pressure off and to start playing with the confidence that they've got. And then they'll stop making all of those little mistakes.
Yeah, it's a good point, actually, because if you take, I know it's just one game, but if you look at the Germany game in the World Cup, where Korea were clearly the underdogs, and they rolled the weathered the storm, performed really well, and got that historic win. But when their expectation is on them, and they are the favourites, do you think they kind of find it hard to deal with that?
It seems so, yeah. And you could see it again in the Asian Games as well. They've got a lot of pressure onto them, and they need to find a way to get rid of that pressure so they can be composed and then, as a result, take those kind of easy chances when they come.
Speaking of a man who's going to have a lot of pressure on him is Son Heung-min. Obviously, he missed the first 2 group stage games because of an agreement with Tottenham Hotspur. But he is in the UAE right now. He landed today being Monday. And he obviously will go straight into the team. Who makes way?
It's difficult to say, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is he going to play as a main striker, or is he going to play as number 10? Is he going to play on the left wing?
I mean, judging from what we've seen so far, probably on that left-hand side, but... I mean, yeah, who makes way, though?
You'd imagine that Lee Chung-young will probably be taken out just to kind of keep the team's balance and keep giving them a lot of pace to kind of counter-attack later on in the tournament. But personally, I think Son should be rested for the China match. So he's played so many games over Christmas in the Premier League and in the Cups in England that he must be exhausted. So I think they should give him a rest and make sure he's completely 100% ready for the later knockout matches. So then when it comes to those big matches in the quarterfinals or semifinals, he can perform at 100% and make the difference.
Yeah, because he played for Tottenham Hotspur.
Yes, yesterday.
Yeah, on Sunday. Yeah. And flew straight to the UAE.
He won't even have time for a training session before the China game.
It's just, he's hectic schedule for him. And I agree that with you, Steve, they're already in the knockout phases now. So there's no point in throwing him straight in yet, because he needs a rest. I mean, he's had such a busy year, hasn't he? It's been relentless for him. All right. Somebody else who we've not talked about yet, though, is Lee Sung-yoon. You mentioned him a little bit earlier. Will he get a chance? Does he deserve to get a chance? What's the situation, you think, with him?
I'd say now Son's back, he's not going to get a chance. I think he was there because Son's missing for the first few games. He's kind of there as backup to be able to be brought on if somebody gets injured in those games. So I think his chance is kind of gone for this tournament. But it would have been nice to see him in one of those other games where he could have shown what he can do. I think in the latter games, he's not going to be as necessary as he might have been in the group stage.
Yeah, obviously, he wasn't even on the reserve list, but he got the call up anyway. But I suppose, because obviously you were asked this question a few weeks ago, when does he deserve to be in the squad? And he said that he didn't originally. There were all other players that were on that reserve list. It's interesting that he got the nod, and he might not even get any minutes on the pitch. So
yeah. I'm guessing he got the nod because he's 100% match fit. He was playing a week before, so he could kind of go in and they know his fitness levels and everything like that, and he's good to go.
Yeah.
Maybe the other players were not quite as good to go as him.
Yeah, fair enough. So what you've seen thus far, has it been in line with your expectations with what Currie have done? I mean, they've won both games. I think we probably assumed that they would do that. Is that fair?
I think so. I think what they're producing now is what I expected they'd produce at the start of the tournament. They've still got scope to change. They've still got scope to improve throughout. Yeah, but steady, but not great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who were your favourites before the tournament started? To go and win it.
At the start, I said Iran are going to... I think I said they're going to cruise past everybody and win every game 5-0 or something like that. When I saw them against Vietnam, I think my expectations of them have gone down a little bit, even though they won that game. You could start to see some chinks in their armour a little bit, so maybe they're beatable.
Yeah.
So I think that helps Korea a bit because they're not as strong as I thought. Iran aren't as strong as I thought they are.
Yeah.
They were early on before the tournament started.
Yeah. Who were your picks, Scott?
Iran, too.
Iran, yeah.
But after watching it, I like the look of Iraq. Iraq look like they can turn a few teams over. They're playing a direct style, quite attacking, quite a good team. They're probably not going to win it, but I like the look of them.
Yeah.
They could go quite far.
How far do you think Korea will go then? It's early to say it now. It's only been two group stage games. It's, you know, still early doors, but can they do it? Can they go and do it?
Well, the other big boys haven't really impressed. Japan, they were lucky to win, and we've been talking a lot about how Korea only won their game 1-0. Japan got 1-0 up through kind of a bit of luck. They got a penalty they probably shouldn't have, and then should have given away a penalty and didn't.
It was a great save.
But then after that, they just sat back and defended and didn't even try to score a second goal. And so I think Japan, they've not looked as strong as people were saying before the tournament. Australia haven't looked that great. I think the teams in the Middle East, Qatar and Saudi Arabia, have looked stronger than maybe they did before. So they could be some of the surprise teams later on.
Yeah. So we are just shy of the China game. Ki Sung-un was back in training, I read. So was EJ Song. In light training, not full training. What, or if any, what change would you make for the China game? Obviously, you got Son Heung-min there for available for selection now. Would you tweak things a little bit now that you've already qualified?
I think I'd try and rest the fullbacks, and because they're both kind of injured and a bit unfit kind of so far. So I'd try and rest them and maybe rotate there a bit. And apart from that, I'd probably keep it quite similar.
Yeah. Eong is suspended, so he will be rested.
Yeah.
By his not by his own volition, but Kim Min-hwan, it's an interesting chance for him to come into the team because he's only had the odd sub appearance for the full team thus far. He's not going to be in the team for the latter stages, but if he comes in and does a good job, then it's only going to be good for him moving forward because, essentially, Eong's 31 now. Kim Min-hwan's got, 10 years ahead of him, at least.
Yeah, and you've got your squad, you've got to use it. If you're going to play the same players every game, then they're going to get burnt out by the later stages of the tournament, and that's going to cost you.
Exactly. So rest the two fullbacks. Any other changes that you'd make?
I'd keep the spine as it is.
Yeah.
Keep the spine playing as it is. But yeah, anything on the sides, rotate.
Yeah, I think Key's going to be missing still.
You
can change a few things like that as well. And I think, I'd rest Sun. So apart from that, I'll keep most things the same.
Okay, join us after the break when we will be hearing from former Dronam Dragons and Australian international defender Robert Cornthwaite.
Looking to spend some downtime with friends and fellow gamers in Seoul? Drop by Retro Game Bar. Located in Hongdae near Sangsu Station Exit 1, RGB is a retro game-inspired bar where you can play any and all types of games. Test their bartenders' drink mixing capabilities or watch a game cast of your choosing. For those with a competitive side, sign up for monthly tournaments including Tekken,
Mario Kart and K-League United's FIFA 19 competitions. Follow RGB on Facebook for tournament info and details on other events throughout the month. Mention that you're a fan of K-League United to their hard-working bartenders when you stop by for a starter shot to kick off the evening. Game on!
Welcome back. It's now time for our special guest, a towering central defender who made over 90 appearances for Dronham Dragons, and a former Socceroo who scored for Australia against Korea a few years ago. It's Robert Cornthwaite.
Okay, so I'm joined by Rob Cornthwaite. Rob, thank you very much for joining us on the K-League United podcast.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Great. So obviously, before we get to the Asian Cup, we'll talk a little bit about your spell in the K-League. You spent 4 years down there in Gwangyang with Dronham Dragons. So obviously, you're no stranger to Korean football.
Yeah.
I've prepared a quiz, if you will, if you don't mind, a few questions about your own spell. So the first question is, now the Korean national team have kind of found it hard to score goals in their first two games of the AFC Asian Cup, but you found the net on quite a number of occasions.
I did.
In the K-League. Do you know how many that you scored?
I'm going to take a guess, roughly, not including cup. I'm going to say 7.
It was. Yeah, it was 7. Yeah.
Not bad.
7 in the league and then 2 in the cup. Yeah, so yeah. Spot on.
That's not bad, huh?
Yeah. Another issue that Korea had was picking up a few yellow cards. 3 in the first game, 1 in the second game. My question for you is, what was the most amount of cards you received in one season whilst in the league?
Well, I'm pretty sure it's going to be in one of my first two seasons. I'm going to say, I'll go 7 again.
It was 9 in 2012. I think it was 9. Yeah.
Oh, a couple of late tackles there, I reckon.
All right, last one. You have played against a few of the current Korea squad, but do you know exactly how many?
I was trying to work it out the other day, if I'm honest. It's it's approximately 5 or 6.
It's 7.
Seven.
Yeah, Kim Sung-gyu and Lee Young, both at Ulsan,
yeah.
That was in 2003, in the game that you scored, actually.
Yeah, I scored against him. We were 1-0 up, and then we lost 3-1, I think.
Yeah, and then Lee Jae-sung against Jeonbuk in 2014. And then Ju Se-jong, you played against him in 2014. Actually, it was your first win in 6, so a 2-1 win at home to Busan.
Okay.
And then Hwang Hee-jo, you played against him very briefly in a 1-1 draw because he came on as a late sub.
Mm-hmm.
And then Hong Chol, played against him for, he was with Songnam at first, and then obviously moved to Suwon Blue Wings. And then the other goalkeeper, Choi Onu, you played against him in a 1-0 win against Daegu in November 2013. So,
well, there's a few there.
Yeah, yeah. So obviously you have played against the full team as well. You was it your first goal for Australia was against South Korea in Korea?
Yeah, correct. I got a late call up to that Australian squad after there was a few injuries in training, and I went up there not expecting to play, and then there was another injury late in the last training session. So ended up starting the match when I wasn't even really meant to be there, and I scored the winner late on in the 90th minute. So that was obviously very very memorable for me, and very special too.
Yeah, I bet. All right, so we'll move on to the AFC Cup, Asian Cup so far. So what have you made of the tournament so far? Any teams that have impressed you in particular?
Oh, well, firstly, with an expanded format and the best third place getters going through, I thought there'd be a lot more one-sided games, if I was honest. I predicted Korea to absolutely hammer Philippines, which obviously wasn't the case. But I think, like most people, Iran have probably been the most impressive so far. I think one thing I really like about them, as I mentioned yesterday on Twitter, is the physicality. In terms of their, the tackling and how they're going about things, because I think they've looked like they've just got a bit of a hard edge to them some of the teams that play very good football, you know, often want the ball all the time. But these guys are very strong, very physical, look very fit. They're big boys. And even when they were 4 goals to the good against Yemen, they were still getting stuck in, and they weren't pulling out of any tackles, and they really wanted to impose themselves still on the match. So they look very, very hungry, and they've been probably the most impressive so far.
Yeah, they haven't been very good. Likewise, any teams that have not quite performed as well as you may have expected?
Thailand obviously got off to a very, very poor start when they were expected to do quite well. But they've obviously turned that round a little bit now. Syria, obviously, the two losses. And they were sort of, a lot of people expecting them to kind of be a dark horse in this tournament, maybe possibly in the last four, even after their good World Cup qualifying run. But they've let go of their coach now after two matches, and they got Australia in the last game. So I think the Aussies just need a draw to go through, and it's not going to be easy. But they've probably been, for me, one of the most disappointing sides.
Yeah, it's not. He wasn't the first manager to be let go midway through the tournament itself. What do you think of that kind of thing, when a manager gets sacked before the tournament's even finished?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, with the Thailand boss, Rajasevic, I think it is, he was under so much pressure coming into the tournament. They had a poor AFF Suzuki Cup just a few weeks earlier. The style of football is not a style that the fans or the media were enjoying or liking. And I mean, he was brought in to be a more defensive-minded coach because they felt previously they were a little bit opened up and exposed. So, you know, the guys at the top sort of have questions to answer. You know, you brought him in to be more defensive, and then you sort of sack him because he was more defensive. So, obviously, that first game, the 4-1 against India, was a bit of a disaster for them. I don't have a problem with him being sacked, if I'm quite honest. And, you know, they obviously turned things around now with a win in the following game. So they're back in contention to go through. As for Syria, I think Bernard Stanger came out of retirement to take the side after a good, you know, qualifying under a local manager. So it was a bit of a strange appointment anyway. And yeah, I mean, after two games, they've got rid of him. So they need to win the last game now against Australia. And even if they do, they still might not go through.
Yeah. So in terms of the South Korea team, how do you think Paolo Bento's side have performed compared to your expectations? You mentioned there that I think like a lot of us thought that the Philippines game would be a little bit more one-sided. But how have the team sort of fared over the last two games, do you think?
Yeah, I thought the last match was a little bit better, obviously. But I think, you know, going forward, as in their attacking play, it's almost a case of it's just not quite happening just yet. I think there is some very, very good signs. If you look at Hwang Yujo, I think he's had 13 shots on goal and 7 on target in two matches, which is quite impressive. Just maybe lacking that slight cohesiveness, that last pass, or that obviously the finishing against Kyrgyz Republic was the thing that let them down. But I do think that they are heading in the right direction. You often see teams build into a tournament. They don't start on fire, but slowly start improving as the tournament goes on. Hee Chan, obviously, lacking a bit of cutting edge so far in the tournament. But one area of a little bit of concern, I think, is the defence. I thought they'd be a lot more defensively solid. I think they gave up a couple of opportunities in the second half against Philippines, when Philippines were sort of running at them. The back four looked a bit cautious. And Kyrgyz Republic as well had a couple of chances, a couple of sniffs that you'd expect, you know, this Korean back four, although there was one change. Hong Chol came in the second game. They haven't been as secure as I probably would have liked them to be.
Yeah. A lot of the press in the build-up to that game were saying that they really needed a good performance. Now, the performance wasn't bad as such, but you could perhaps say that a 1-0 win is a bit underwhelming.
Certainly. As you said, I mean, they missed two open goals. Hee Chan and Chon Yong put the ball over from all of 6 yards with no goalkeeper, no one in the net. They skied it. Hee Chan as well. I think Hwang Jo hasn't Yeah, I mean, he could have scored, but they weren't as clear cut, certainly in the second half, as you know, some of those other chances. Kujar Choles looked busy and around the box without really producing anything. But yeah, certainly 1-0 was underwhelming. Could have been and should have been 3 at least. And that probably would have made people, you know, a little bit happier. But, you know, they're not playing. I liken it to Australia in the first game against Jordan. They played badly and they lost. Some of the other teams have played okay or badly and they've won. So Korea's playing okay. And they're winning. So, you know, obviously once they hit their straps a little bit, which you would expect them to do now as the tournament's progressing, I think they'll be okay. Certainly Son coming back in. There's a lot of talk about Son. I don't think he's going to be the saviour. He's not going to come back in and all of a sudden Korea just going to be unbelievable. But certainly he's the best player in Asia at the moment. So he's definitely going to help.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I mean, like you said, they have picked up 2 wins out of 2, so you can't really argue with that as such. And do you think that at this stage of the tournament, it is just about getting those results and the performances will come a bit later on?
Yeah, well, that's what you'd be hoping. I mean, certainly in a tournament, it's so short. I mean, there's only 5 more games left if you're going to win the tournament. So results are the utmost important thing. You want to be doing it more convincingly, probably against these sides. But if Korea go on to win the tournament, it's not going to really matter how they play or what the performances are like. It's just going to matter that they're the champion. They will get better. I do expect them to start playing some better football. As I said, the combinations in and around the front third have been quite good. And the 2 goals that they have scored have almost been identical. The ball coming in off the left, bit of a reverse pass to someone making a run through, and then a cutback or a cross or whatever. So, I think it's not panic stations by any means. And the form coming into the tournament was superb. So, you know, there's no question marks over that. Like I said, more convincing. You would have liked to see them, but 6 points out of 6 is, you know, you can't ask for anything better than that.
True. Another attacking option that they have is Jidong Won, someone that you spent some time with him whilst in the K-League before he got his move to Europe. What qualities do you think that he could bring to the team if he is given a chance to come on or even start?
Well, I mean, it's been a long time, obviously, since I played with him. And I know I followed his career, obviously, a little bit. But I can't really, you know, come out and say exactly how he plays. Certainly, I think Hwang's movement and his running potentially off the shoulder is probably a lot more than G. But I think his target play, his aerial strength, obviously things that, you know, could be useful later in the tournament. I certainly don't see Jidong Won getting a start in front of Hwan In-joo, but, you know, he's a good option off the bench should there be injuries or you need something late on. He's certainly a talent and he's spent, I don't know, now probably 5 or 6 years in Europe and playing in a very, very good league. So he's a very talented player. But I think so far, Bento obviously has his favourite and it's rightly so. You know, Hwang In-joo has been prolific in the J-League and in the Asian games as well. So I think G might have to just buy his time, I'm afraid.
Yeah, it's a fair point. Obviously, Australia are the current holders of the competition, of course, having beat Korea in the final in Sydney 4 years ago. What have you made of the Socceroos' start to the competition? Are you obviously a bit surprised by the defeat to Jordan in the opening game?
Yeah, it was a poor start. They looked like they lacked any sort of ideas in that front third because obviously they had plenty of the ball and plenty of play in the attacking third. Australia over the last few years has always had a problem against the counter-attack and certainly against Jordan, they looked as though they were struggling to contain them on the break. They had a free kick as well. They hit the crossbar, so it could have been 2-0 at halftime. But the second game was much better. They looked like their movement in front of the ball and off the ball was there. Scored 2 nice goals and possibly could have had a couple more in the first half. The concern for me in the first game was the crossing of the ball. They were looking to get a lot of crosses into the box without having anyone in the box who's recognised for, you know, scoring from aerial, you know, from the head. So Jamie McLaren got his first goal. It was his first shot on target for 7 hours of football. So I still don't really see him as the solution. I'm delighted for him to get a goal, and it was an important goal for him and for Australia. But I'm not going to get carried away with his performance against Palestine, because had it not been for the sluggish performance against Jordan, this would have just been an expected performance and an expected win. So because they played poorly and then played sort of to their standard, I don't think it's enough to get carried away and say, oh, we've played brilliantly against Palestine. It's kind of what they should have been doing in the first game and what they should have done against Palestine anyway. So the test will come now against Syria. A point will be enough to get us through to the next round. And still some selection and injury problems, which have sort of overshadowed a few of the earlier matches. But they should be good enough to get through the group. And then we'll just have to wait and see who they get from there. But they're not filling me with confidence at the moment. At the moment, yeah.
There are, of course, a couple of people in the K-League who would perhaps have thought that maybe they deserve the call-up to the Socceroos squad. Paul Hang Steelers is Connor Chapman, JG United is Alexander Jovanovic. A move to K-League opened the door for Matthew German. He obviously broke into the Socceroos team whilst with Sun Blue Wings. You would think that the same would be said for those two, wouldn't you?
I mean, it's an interesting one now because, you know, look at the centre-backs that we've got. Sainsbury's at PSV, Deganek, overnight, he's just moved to Saudi Arabia. German, as you say, is in Saudi as well. So, there is a competition for places. I think for Alex at Jeju, he's been there for such a time now that I would be quite certain that they've been and they've looked. And different managers would have seen him. Of course, he hasn't been called into any camps, I don't believe. But unfortunately for him, I think that for whatever reason, that he's just a player that they've put a line through. Now, I honestly believe playing at that level regularly is, it puts you right in the shop window. But for whatever reason, they've decided not to. For Connor, I mean, he's known in Australia as a centre-back, but he's played much of the season playing in midfield. So for him to get called up to the Australian national team as a midfielder, would definitely surprise me. And if he's not playing regularly at centre-back, then you can't really call him up as a centre-back either. I do think he's got talent. He's just re-signed for another 2 years, and he's definitely a player. He's at a good age where, I'd be continually keeping an eye on him and keeping progress on him. And yes, I think he probably does deserve a call up to at least a couple of camps, maybe to a few friendlies, so you can get a closer look at him and get to know him as a person, as a player. But, he's done tremendously well. After starting at Incheon and then going to Pohang, he's had a great back end of the season. So he's definitely one to watch. And, he just needs to keep doing his thing. And if it comes, it comes. If not, like for most players playing around the world, it doesn't come. I'm sure that he's happy with what he's doing and where he's at.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Finally, then, based on what you've seen so far, who are your pick to go and win the tournament? And how far do you think South Korea will go?
Well, before the tournament, South Korea were my pick, actually. I think they have very good balance between some younger guys and some experience. And I'll still stick with them, if I'm honest. They haven't showed everything they can in the first two games, but I still think there's promise. And as we said, Son coming back in. I think this could be the year for South Korea. Obviously, Iran, very, very tough. They're probably the one, like I said, been most impressive. Saudi Arabia has done well. They've got two comfortable wins under their belt. There's honestly five or six sides, isn't there, that could really win it. And then there's probably one or two dark horses as well. But, yeah, I've chose Korea from the start. I feel like they can be just growing into this tournament. They got China this coming round, match day three. So that'll give them a bit more of a test. And hopefully they lift their game for that one. And then it's knockout football. Anything can happen. But one thing I will say about Korea that really does worry me is the penalties, because they've missed five of their last 11 spot kicks. And certainly when it comes to a shootout, you want to be having, usually it's a mental game and whoever's more confident. So let's hope they don't end up in any shootouts. But I'll stick with Korea. I'll keep faith.
All right. Well, I'm sure our listeners will appreciate that. Yeah. So thanks, Rob. We appreciate you joining us on the podcast. Enjoy the rest of the tournament.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email KLU at info@kleagueunited.com or tweet at @KLeagueUnited with any questions, comments or reactions. Or follow us on Facebook to ask directly during one of our live shows.
Hello, welcome back. Paul Neat here with Scott Whitelock.
Hello.
And Steve Price.
Hey, how's it going?
So you just heard there from Robert Cornthwaite. But now, Scott, we're going to have a little look into the mailbag. What have we got?
Yeah, we've got a question that's coming on Twitter from @SeanHQuinn. He wants to know about Kim Ki-hee and what does Kim Ki-hee have to do to get back into the Korean squad? He says that he's arguably one of the best centre-backs in MLS last year, so what does he need to do and why has he been omitted from the Korean national team squad?
It's a good question. I don't know.
I'm going to say he needs to do a bit of a Benjamin Button and get a few years younger. When Bento started his squad, he kind of based it off the players in the World Cup and the players in the Asian Games, and he's added a few other faces in there more recently. But apart from now on, he's going to be looking towards the World Cup and players who are going to be hitting their prime in 4 years' time. And, I mean, Kim Ki-hee's older than Kim Yong-kwon, and the rest of the defence are all pretty young players like Kim Min-jae and Kwon Kyung-won and all those. They're much younger. So I think that, to be honest, I don't see Kim Ki-hee getting back into the side.
Interesting. Yeah, it's obviously method there in Paolo Bento's approach. But you still need a little bit of experience to guide these youngsters.
Yeah, I mean, if somebody gets injured or something, he might get pulled in, but he's not going to be, I think, one of those core players, definitely.
Okay, next question, Scott.
This one's coming on Twitter also from our Gyeongnam correspondent, James Edrupt. He says, on paper, the Korea team is very talented, but the football on the whole they are producing is tepid and it's easy to defend against. They've always got 2 goals in 2 games. How can Korea become exciting to watch again?
Well, like you said earlier, Steve, you know, the stats kind of tell some of the story in the sense that they created a lot of chances, but were unlucky. They hit the inside of the bar twice. So they are creating chances. We need that little bit of luck to fall for them.
Yeah, I think you can't really say they're easy to defend against when they're producing those kind of chances. And I was wondering, when he says exciting to watch again, I mean, compared to when? I mean, they're far more exciting than under Shilake, far more exciting than under Hong Mong Bo before him. And even though these two games were not up to some of the earlier kind of friendly matches, they're still better than a lot of those older performances that we've had to see over the last 5 or 6 years.
I think when Sun enters the fray as well, there's going to be a lot more electricity. It's going to be much more fun to watch. So keep watching, James.
All right. Anything else there, Scott?
We've had one more question come in on email from Cumin. And he wants to know, the first two group matches have been quite disappointing score-wise. Do you think the team is developing as the time's passing in the tournament?
I think based on the first game and how many more chances they created in the second game, kind of tells you its own story.
Yeah, and if you put in the Saudi Arabia friendly as well, I think the team's got better each of those games as it's gone along.
Yeah, that's true. And like we've said earlier, Son Heung-min's coming in, they've got Ki Sung-jung coming back. They will eventually hit peak form, we hope, when it really matters in the knockout stages. So
we've already said it, they're not playing badly.
No.
They're just not converting their chances, so yeah. I don't think there's anything to worry about.
Indeed. Well, I think that's all we have time for today, gentlemen. So thank you for coming over. We are on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or TuneIn Radio. And also, if you are listening on Football Nation Radio, you can find us every Thursday at 3 p.m. Korea time or 5 p.m. Sydney time. So, until next time. Goodbye.
See ya.
Bye.